Fiona Ritchie with you. Welcome to the Thistle and Shamrock. Travel with me this week for a rendezvous with a dear friend, one of the early supporters of this radio programme from back in his days with Battlefield Band. It's Brian McNeil. So here we are at the Swan and Noah gathering in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina on the campus of Warren Wilson College in the middle of Traditional Song Week. And one of the nice things to do in a week like this when you're all doing classes and we're seeing performances in concerts, and some of you are performing or will perform by the end of the week, it's quite nice to take a little bit of time out, meet one of your instructors, who also happens to be an internationally revered folk and traditional musician and songwriter. So it's an incredible pleasure for me to introduce somebody that I first met over 30 years ago, trailblazing all around the world with Battlefield Band as their fiddler, but also as a multi-instrumentalist and singer and songwriter. Since then, he's continued to be a prolific songwriter and tunesmith. He's a novelist, a teacher, and a historian, and we will try to find out how he fits all that into one life in just a little while. So will you please welcome Brian McNeil.
Thank you.
live here at Traditional Song Week at the Swan and Noah Gathering, the 22nd annual Swan and Noah Gathering here in North Carolina's beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. Beautiful fiddle music to enjoy with Brian McNeil, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us. Another round of applause, please. It's always nice when people introduce themselves musically. Tell us about the tunes.
Well, the first tune is one I wrote, and it's particularly appropriate to Traditional Song Week because it is actually the tune of a Brian McNeil song. I was approached by our wonderful Celtic Connections Festival about 10 years ago now to write an orchestral piece. So I decided that rather than writing simply an instrumental orchestral piece, I would write a song cycle. And the subject I chose was the near extinction of the osprey in Scotland, the great fish eagle. And I decided I would tell the story of that in a kind of distinctive way, because it seemed to me that the destruction of the osprey was very much akin to what happened with the Highland clearances. Capitalism and commerce caused people and animals, beautiful things, to be removed from the glens. And that particular song is called The Steel Grey Skies, and my great friend Dick Gawkins sang it when we did the whole thing with an orchestra at Celtic Connections. And the second tune is a pipe tune that I'm very fond of. It's called The Boy's Lament for His Dragon, which is a strange title, and I think actually comes from the British soldiers who were stationed in Germany at the end of the war, because the German, it's also known as The Boy's Lament for His Kite, for a lost kite, and the German word for a kite is Drache, which is dragon, and I think it has something to do with that, but I think it's a lovely pipe tune.
I want to ask Brian to cast his mind back.
Ooh.
I'll give you a bit of, you can take some deep breaths before you do that, to 1982.
Wow.
Now, I was at this time living in Charlotte, North Carolina, hadn't been there for that very long, and having had a trip home at Christmas time, I met up with Alan Reid, who will be here next week, I believe, and interviewed Brian for my fledgling little local at that time radio programme. I came upon the idea that I could have Battlefield Band come and play a concert in Charlotte, and Brian came as part of that troupe to put on a show, and they became regulars in Charlotte, North Carolina, and really they helped to kick off or perhaps awaken an interest in folk and traditional music in the Charlotte area. The Charlotte Folk Society, now a venerable organisation, a very healthy local charity and very active organisation, was actually launched from names collected at the night of the first Battlefield Band concert. And it was one of those, you know, kind of life moments, really, when I look back, because it started a whole lot of things, and it probably set me on my road towards doing what I do as well. And I wonder how much you remember about that night, Brian.
I don't remember so much about the actual concert itself. I remember we'd had the day from hell getting there, right? Because we'd had a really bad night the night before. We'd had a bunch of extreme purists the night before who objected to us having bagpipes and fiddle on the same stage at the same time, and then objected to the fact that we had electronic keyboards. They were the spawn of the devil, of course. And then on top of that, we had a very interesting encounter with one of your wonderful state troopers on the way to Charlotte to do with the speed that we were driving our rented van at. And we arrived in Charlotte absolutely penniless to find this wonderful lady, you know, and we'd been suffering at that point from some pretty badly organized gigs all up and down the country. We were really absolutely fledgling at the business of touring in America, and we came to Charlotte and everything went like that. Everything went just absolutely tic-tac, and Fiona was so welcoming, and Fiona's household became what was known in the trade among the bands as a safe house. Okay, it was a place where you could go, and nobody would care if you were in a bad mood. You could go and sit in the corner, and you could watch the TV, or you could have a beer,
or do your laundry.
Oh, that was the holy grail, getting your laundry done. You know, like, you've no idea what the young bands today. Well, you know, when I was head of the traditional music course at the Scottish Academy, the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama in Glasgow, the young students would always ask me, what's it like being on the road? And I would say, well, the first 30 years are the worst. And and then after that, I would say, like, the one thing that you've really got to take care of, you know, is you've got to take care of getting your laundry done on the road. That's the only thing that really matters. Everything else will pale into insignificance beside that, you know?
I'm sure a lot of these guys could write memoirs about life on the road, but probably...
I will do that at some point as a novelist, but I'm only going to do it when I'm absolutely sure I don't need any friends anymore.
Yes. Okay. Well, I have been thinking back quite a lot lately. It's quite a nice time to catch up with Brian, with sort of crossing this point of the 30th anniversary of my programme as a weekly national programme, although it started, you know, I started my radio work before that at WFAE in Charlotte. It's caused me to reflect quite a lot, and I found myself looking through archives and looking at old photographs, and I met up with Alan Reid, your old playing buddy in Battlefield Band, and we reminisced and looked at old photographs for my sort of 30th anniversary programme. And one of the things I did was I looked at the playlist for the very first national show to see what all was on there. And I had included a variety of music that I would still play today on any programme. And one of those pieces was a song that I loved then and I love still. And it's one of those songs that will live on. And it was interesting to me at the time because I think even when Brian and the guys first arrived for that first gig, they were coming in on the back of a wonderful album called Home Is Where the Van Is, which stands as one of those seminal folk and traditional music albums from Battlefield Band. It must have come out in about
81.
Yeah, so right around about that same time. So they were touring on the back of that and they were playing some of the music that was on that album. And one of them was a song that was the first song that Brian wrote.
That's right. I became very interested in writing songs about events in Scotland that hadn't been connected to a song. So I went and I looked for a song about this local event, which was the biggest social event in Scotland in many ways, for many hundreds of years. It was the cattle market in Scotland, in Falkirk, where the drovers would bring the cattle down from the northwest, and they would sell it on in Falkirk to the buyers from England and from the Low Countries and from Germany. And of course, being what it wasn't just a cattle market, it was the place where you came for a good drink, to meet a sweetheart, to sell something, to find a job for the next ploughing quarter. You did all of these things. So I looked and looked and looked and could not, for the life of me, find a song. This song was written on three continents, which is kind of...
Says a lot about you.
I think so, yeah. But when I finally finished it and we recorded it in Battlefield Band on that album, suddenly some guy phoned me and said, I found a traditional song about the fair. And he sent it to me on a little cassette. And I sort of went, yes, because my song was better, you know. But it was a nice feeling. And the song now has reached ridiculous, you know, numbers of people have recorded this and... I've had a lot of fun with it, so I love it. The song's called The Lads of the Fair. There's a very simple wee chorus if you want to join in. The chorus goes, you can see them all, the lads of the fair, lads of the fourth and the Carron water, working lads and lads with gear, lads who'd sell you the provost daughter, soldiers back for the German wars and peddlers up for the border and lassies with an eye for mair than a kai at the Tryston Fair at Falkirk. Okay, good.
Yep.
Thank Bonny lass, lie near me and let the brandy cheer ye. From the road from Fife to Falkirk's lang and cold and wet and weary. And my trade it is the weaving at the bonny town of Leven. And we'll drink to the health of the farmer's dames while by my cloth the ball. You can see them all, the lads of the fair, on the fourth and the Carron water, working lads and lads with gear. What sell you the province daughter? Soldiers back to the German wars, peddlers up there the border. Lassies me and I for mayor and the Kai and the Tryston Fair at Falkirk. Job they lead the pony, for the path is steep and stony, and we're three lang weeks for the Isle of Skye, and the beasts are thin and bony. And we'll take the last o' the siller, and we'll buy ourselves a gill or two, and we'll drink to the lads full by the Kye, in Falkirk town the mall. You can see them all, the lads of the fair, o' the fourth and the Carron water, working lads and lads with gear. What sell you the province daughter? Soldiers back to the German wars, peddlers up to the border. Lassies we and I for mail and the Kye and the Tryston Fair at Falkirk. Ah, stand there and I'll show ye, for there's the town below ye, that you'd best bide here in the barn the next, for the night watch to he know ye. My brother, he's a ploughman, and I'm for feeing no man, and we'll drink to the price of the harvest corn in Falkirk town the bomb.
You can see them all, the lads of the fair, on the fourth and the cabin water. Working lads and lads we gear, lads what sell you the province door. Soldiers back to the German wars, peddlers up to the border. Lassies with an eye for mail from the Kai of the Dresden Fair. The work of the weaver's over, likewise the day of the drover, and the ploughboy sits on a tractor now, too high to see the clover. The working's no so steady, but the lads are all still ready to drink the good health of the working man and Falkirk town the more. You can see them all, the lads of the fair, lads of the fourth and the Carron water, working lads and lads we gear. What sell you the province daughter? Soldiers back to the German wars, peddlers up to the border, lassies with an eye for mail and the kind. At the Dresden Fair at Falkirk.
People ask me which are my favourite pieces of music, my favourite tracks, and I always say to people, well, if I'm playing it on my radio programme, it's because I really like it. I don't ever play anything that I don't like. But I've always been quite often in saying that's always been one of my favourite songs, and it's just a story all wrapped through a song. It's so visual, we can imagine it. And no great surprise that Brian went on to become a novelist, and we'll talk a wee bit about that too. But as songwriters, you know, your songs go out there and other people might record them, and you wonder how long they'll continue on, long past your time. But there's something quite special about this song and how it's been commemorated in a very permanent way.
I was absolutely delighted to get a phone call last year from the local council in Falkirk. I was convinced that my hometown had pretty much forgotten me or decided to disown me because I was so disreputable or something like that. And they phoned me up and they said, in conjunction with one of the local woodland charities, they wanted permission to use two lines of that song. Stand here and I'll show you, there's the town below you, to carve into stone at a viewpoint above the town, looking from the south to the north, where you can see the beginnings of the Highlands and you can see all the steeple of the town and all the rest of it. So I was taken up there last year. My wife and I went up, and it's a reclaimed spoil heap from a mine. And they've reclaimed it and they've planted it with wildflowers, and they're going to make it into a sports field. And they have two viewpoints with beautiful semicircles of Caithness stone, and those words are now in stone. So I've become part of the fabric of my hometown, and I'm a bit delighted about that.
Well, after touring all over the world more than a few times over with Battlefield Band, you decided to part company with the band, your good friends, because you had so many other things you wanted to do and ideas that were forming in your own mind that you were better set up to pursue yourself. And I think one of the first things that I was aware of that you did upon leaving Battlefield Band, I suspect you'd been gathering material for it for quite a while, was your project The Back of the North Wind. And again, it was storytelling, and you used the lives and of various characters, some famous, some unknown really, mm-hmm. in history, to craft songs and tell the story about the Scots diaspora across to North America mostly.
The Back of the North Wind began with a story out of my own family. My great uncle was a man called James McNeill, who was a carpenter, a joiner, as we call him in Scotland. And Jim emigrated to the States in 1923. And he went to Detroit, and one of his first jobs there was he built handrails for wooden, beautiful carved mahogany handrails for the fire escapes on a couple of skyscrapers in Detroit. There is one building still standing that has some of his fire escape rails, and when it's going to come down very soon. I've got $100 on with the super that I get a length of my uncle's handrail. But he had this fantastic life. He was one of these larger-than-life guys who saw action at D-Day and was able to somehow draw a pension. I don't quite know how this happened. He drew a pension from both the American and the British armies, which is pretty good, because he went back and forward. He had a terrible time in the Depression. He came back to Scotland in 1929, and when he was back in Scotland, the stock market crashed. And all of his friends and his family said, Jim, don't go back, it's going to be terrible. And it was only on the occasion of his 80th birthday over a dram, right, that I finally had the opportunity to say to him, like, why did you do it? Why did you go back? And he looked me in the eye over the top of his whiskey and he said, I had a ticket. And that was it. The ticket was bought, he was gone. There was no question of it. So I took that story, and that was a natural song for me. And then someone told me the story of Flora McDonald and her emigration, not least to here in North Carolina. And then we moved on from that to Andrew Carnegie, who's a figure I find very ambivalent in Scottish history. And again, like, it was worth a song. And gradually, and the back of the North Wind, without me even really looking for stories, they came to me. And I realized that I had to do some kind of thematic album. And because the explanations for the songs were so big, I felt that I had to do something more than just talk about them. So I did an audiovisual show that showed you what these people's lives were, and at the same time wrote a song about them and put the whole thing together. And you know, the folks here at Swan I Know were kind enough to let me do it here, and we had a great time doing it here.
And then you started to look at Scots in Europe and other parts of the world, and the stories that came out of that as well. They seemed to have found you. People would come to you and start to say, have you ever looked into the Scots in Russia or whatever? And
well, yes. The interesting thing was that it was unnatural to me, because everybody knows about the Scots who came to America. But what people don't know is that 100 years before thinking about the Wild West, it was the Wild East. If you look at a modern map of Poland, you will find over 150 Scottish place names. Right? And there is one right up on the Lithuanian border in Poland. There is a village called Skosia. Right? And my wife works as a TV producer, and one of our cameramen had been on a farming program up there and said, there's this fantastic old wooden sign, 200 years old, that says Scotia, you know? So we thought, right, we're going to just go and do it. We're going to go and photograph the sign. And of course, they took it down the day before we got there. And we got this metal road sign. But it was still, and the people there were still very, very proud of their Scottish heritage. And it was a great thing. The show is called The Baltic to Byzantium. People have been very kind about it. And we did it. That premiered at Celtic Connections again, the fount of so much good stuff in Scotland. And we had a ball with it.
Well, my father was a soldier, for the parish of an all. Would fain have seen me listed in the gallant 42. But there's more to life than drummer fife or a Highland lad to know. So I took ship at Peterhead, bound for the Lowlands low. And I fell in with a merchant lad to the town of Armentia, who promised me an honest fee to help him guard his wares. And if I'd go with him to Danzig and the plains of Muscovy, there'd be the Baltic and Byzantium to see. I bought and sold the Swedes and Poles for a stock to the Rhine. It was hides for corn and cups of horn, salt for Spanish wine. And when the armies passed me by, well, I always raised my glass, for there's many's a sojourn laddie buys a trinket for his lass. And he answer heard the call of him in the port of Amsterdam, when a fiddler laddie played the airs of Scotia for a dram. But the other call was strong enough to turn me frae the shore, for the Baltic and Byzantium once more. In Rome they stole my horses, in Prague they stole my kit, and on the bonny banks of Istria, well, a lassie stole my hair. I Aye, but I'd teach me 20 words by all the Brodnik's words. By the time she'd taught me 40, had enough to plead my cause. I asked her if she never dreamed of different airs to see, or to make a life as honest wife to a lad of pips like me. And when her father tried to reason her a richer man to find, I said the Baltic and Byzantium were mine. Sit the winter lang, the bairn's about my knee. And if you can't show me the man way, a better life than me. But there's times I sit and I wonder, and the thoughts that fill my mind are tides and trades and bargains made, then roads I've yet to find. So perhaps I'll rise right early and I'll saddle up my mare. On our back lay a peddler's pack where the best of Scotia's wears. And I'll set out with a good will by mountain and by glen to see the Baltic and Byzantium again.
My guest is Brian McNeil at Traditional Song Week, which traditionally opens a summer of music-making weeks at Warren Wilson College in the mountains of western North Carolina, all part of the Swannanoa Gathering. A playlist of this week's music will come online at thistleradio.com, where you can also listen again to recent shows. For now, do stay with me for more conversation and music from Brian McNeil. This is NPR. This is Fiona Ritchie with music from Brian McNeil's album The Busker and the Devil's Only Daughter. We're at the Swannanoa Gathering and we're enjoying some time to chat with Brian McNeil. And besides songwriting, we're about to hear about his work as a novelist.
I actually started doing it purely and simply because the tours were so brutal that I had to do something else. At that point, Battlefield Band in the early 80s, we'd be doing 3 months tours of the States and Canada. And, you know, it was two flights a day and then a gig every day. And, you know, you book your flights on block, you're sitting in the same seat, you're eating the same meal. The chances are, if you're interested in it, you're watching the same movie. And we were on a flight from Seattle to Alaska, and I thought, if I don't do something different, I'm going to strangle the guy in the street in front of me or something, you know? And I went away to the stewardess, and I got a couple of sheets of paper and a pen, and I just started to write, and I was hooked. And I went away after I'd done a couple of pages now. I woke Doogie Pincock up to our piper. I woke him up about three rows behind, and I said, Doogie, read this. What do you think of it? And he took one look at it and said, ah, that's fine. Now leave me alone. And that was it. And I was hooked from that point on, I have to say.
We all could make better use of our downtimes and our delays. I'm just wondering, when you were touring so much around the United States, especially in the first tours when everything was so fresh to you and you were, you know, seeing things, hearing things for the first time, what kinds of connections you might have noticed and started to investigate with your curious mind about the links between our music or music in Scotland and Ireland and the music you were hearing when you came down to North Carolina and you were listening, you know, old-time music, which wasn't really heard much over in Scotland at that time, no.
Well, we were a very gregarious bunch, shall we say, right? And if there was what became known in the band as an après-ski, in other words, a party after the gig, we would automatically go to that, and usually the local musicians would come out en masse. And I remember particularly meeting a wonderful man called Frank George, somewhere in West Virginia. And Frank was a fiddler, traditional fiddler, recorded in the Library of Congress. And he and I became great friends. And, you know, I would play him a Scottish tune, and he would play me back the American version of it. And very often, same tune with minimal differences, but, you know, like double stopped on the fiddle and a slightly different title. For instance, there was one called Campbell's Farewell to Redcastle, a really well-known Scottish bagpipe tune. And, you know, I played that to Frank, and Frank said, that's not Campbell's Farewell to Redcastle, that's Campbell's Farewell to Red Gap. And it was great. And, you know, he taught me a whole load of stuff. And there was a great bunch of ladies from Boone, North Carolina, who came out and sort of accompanied us on tour for about two or three gigs. And they taught us all sorts of things. They taught us a great tune called June Apple. And we adapted June Apple for bagpipes. June Apple came from the Appalachian fiddle tradition and came back and became a Scottish bagpipe tune, to the extent that now, if you like, a generation and a half later, the kids in Scotland think that June Apple's a traditional Scottish tune. Because Battlefield Band used to play it, which is very nice. You know?
Cool circle.
Yeah.
One of the things that going your own way allowed you to do was to explore all these lines of inquiry that you were pursuing, but also to really explore your own talents as a fiddler and a multi-instrumentalist, and to sort of see, you know, how much music can I sort of put down myself in the studio and layer up and orchestrate, in a sense, through my own doing. And I think of an album like Unstrung Hero.
I had a lot of fun with it, but it's a phase that multi-instrumentalists go through of, you know, like, I have to play absolutely everything on this album myself, you know. And, you know, you go through it once, you get it out of your system, and then you become a human being again, you know. But I did it. I had a lot of fun doing it. And the one thing it did for me was it made me realize that if you're going to be a multi-instrumentalist, you better have the chops. You know, there is nothing worse than standing up there and being not bad on one instrument and then having another bunch of stuff that you can only play two chords on, you know. You can't do that. If you're going to be a multi-instrumentalist, you're committed to more work than normal people, right? Because you have to keep it up. You know, you don't necessarily have to keep all of it up to a level that would make you a soloist and everything, but you have to be very near that. And
I'm just thinking about the amount of space that must have been vacated in the tour van with Battlefield Band when you left the band with all these instrument cases, because Brian was the only person I've seen on stage reach for this, reach for that, reach for the other, and reach for a hurdy-gurdy, which actually was fantastic in some of your work. Do you have something you play from Unstrung Hero that takes you maybe onto another instrument or...?
Yeah, sure. Yep. I was always fascinated by the contribution that the gypsies made to the preservation of our traditional music. And there was a wonderful gypsy singer called Betsy White. And Betsy, she never made a penny from music in her life. She sang for her own edification and her family's, and she was one of these people. If she had been from a nice, comfortable, middle-class family, she'd probably have been an opera star. But she wasn't. She was a gypsy. She lived in a bow tent up in the glens. She never made a penny, as I said, from music in her life. She sang for her own family's edification and for her own. And Betsy's first job was to sit on the banks of the fast-flowing rivers in the east of Scotland, the Tay or the Isla or the Erne, and keep watch while her father was in the river fishing for pearls. Because the rivers on the east coast are shallow and very fast and very clean. And there were mussel beds and oyster beds. And the gypsies were very good and very ecological fishers. They had a great way of doing this. They would go out in the middle of the stream and they would have either a bucket or a box with the bottom cut out of it. And they would put a pane of glass in that. And they would put that down on the surface of the water to take out the reflection of the sun on the surface of the water. And that let them look forward and locate the oyster beds. Ecological fishers, they never took too much. They never took anything that was unripe. But, of course, all of these stretches of water, they were owned by big sporting estates, by aristocrats, by fishing syndicates, by powerful people, by the kind of people that one day my country will have the courage to do without. And inevitably, somebody always told that there was a gypsy in the river fishing for pearls. And many of these big estates had what was essentially their own police force. They were called the water baileys. They kept the water bailiffs, that's just short for, and they would patrol the banks of the rivers to make sure that nothing untoward was going on. And Betsy's job was to sit there on the banks, and when the water baileys came, she had to make the noise of an owl to warn off her father. And her father was a rare gypsy indeed, because he knew how to swim. So when he heard the noise, he would abandon his gear and head for the other bank. And the song's about a more innocent time. It's about a time when, if you like, when simpler things seem to be rewarded in a simpler way. There's a wee chorus, if you feel like joining in with me. It goes like this.
When the lavrock sang in the morning.
When the lavrock sang in the morning. Lavrock is just a Scottish dialect word for a lark. And the song says at the end that the real pearl was the traditional music that these people saved for us. Here we go.
Do you mind how your father used to stand back bowed in the Isle of Stream, eyes upon the shingle and the sand for the broad gleam or the oyster? Do you mind all the pearl fishers' lore, how you hid fair the wrath of the baileys on the shore, the siller or the water in your eye? When the lavrock sang in the morning. When the lavrock sang in the morning. Ah, the summer days were grand in the warm sun, oh, your father's smile, when he let you hold the treasure in your hand. I have brought you for the water, and he gave your mother the pearl to hold in her bosom like the lady of an apple, as she gathered the wood for the fire. When the lavrock sang in the morning. When the lavrock sang in the morning. Thank you. Did you sing across the waters of the Tay for a fine pearl in your favour's hand? Was that the price the river made you pay? Was a pearl for a pearl the bargain? For where's the jewel to compare with a traveller's song in the moorland air, hidden in the shell of your heart when the lavrock sang in the morning? When the lavrock sang in the morning, when the lavrock sang in the morning.
We're at Traditional Song Week here at the Swan and Noah Gathering at Warren Wilson College, and we're enjoying the music and the company and the anecdotes and insights of Brian McNeil. And Brian's here at Traditional Song Week as a teacher, also performing in the evenings and available for all kinds of blethers at all sorts of times of the day and night. But he is here as a teacher, and it strikes me that that's another turn that your musical career took you in. Back in Scotland, maybe about a decade ago or something, you were invited to come and head up a new programme at what was then called the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama. I'm wondering how the experience was for you.
The experience was, first of all, wonderful, particularly because I was given rather beautiful responsibility of being in charge of a large proportion of the next generation of Scottish musicians. I mean, I went into the job purely and simply because I felt it was time I gave something back. Scottish music had been very good to me. It had given me a career. It had taken me all around the world. It had allowed me to express myself. And suddenly, around about the turn of the century, we all sort of started looking at it, and we realised that everybody we were looking at in audiences was the same age as us, or older. And we realised that if we didn't start growing a new public fast, if we didn't start taking care of the roots of the next generation and what they did, then this music was going to be in trouble. And I'm pleased to say that because of the influence of my generation of bands, right, Battlefield Band, Fife and Reel, Ossian, the Tannehill Weavers, Silly Wizard, the Boys of the Loch, all of these people, because of that bunch of bands and then this academic course, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that we turned the situation round in Scotland, and we actually made it suddenly a good thing for young people to do. Put it this way, in the early 1970s, when we were starting to play, if you played traditional music, if you played a fiddle or an accordion, you were the class geek, you know, if you were a kid, right? If by the time you actually did that, around about 2010, you were the coolest guy in the class, okay? So you can measure the success of it. In 1995, I played a fiddle festival in Edinburgh called Fiddle 95. I went back to play Fiddle 2005. 95, we had 200 people, and we thought we were doing well. In 2005, we had 3,000 people, and probably 90% of them were under 16. And I don't think I've ever felt prouder. And there were all sorts of difficulties in the job. Like, I mean, first of all, you know, it was all committee meetings and funding and all the rest of it. The only committee meetings I've ever heard were in, ever taken part in, were in a Connellane van, you know. So it was a complete culture shock for me, but not as much of a culture shock as it was for the Royal Scottish Academy, I'll tell you. But anyway, we got through all of that, and I got to meet these wonderful young people, and we did it. The battles we had are still the same battles we have now. And the great danger that we have, and I will never stop saying this to people, it only took two generations from 1968, when I went to Glasgow first as a student and wanted to learn to play the fiddle, and in a city of a million souls could not find a teacher for traditional music in Scotland. We went from that in 1968 to that situation in maybe 2010, where everybody and his dog was playing traditional music. Only two generations from nothing to plenty. And I keep telling people who want to be complacent about it would only take two generations for it to go back to nothing. So we have to be ever vigilant about it. We have to do really exactly what Beth was talking about in our talk yesterday. We have to get this music through to people at an early age and make sure they have all the resources they need for it. The Academy course was a huge part of that, and I was delighted to do it for a long time. I left when I thought I wasn't really being allowed to be as effective as I wanted to be. I was quite radical about what I wanted. I took my students on tour. I took my students to Europe. I took my students to England. I even brought my students over here at one point. And getting funding for that was like pulling teeth. But we got it and we did it, and I wanted more of that. And I realized that I was up against a brick wall, so I stopped. And I went back out on the road and had a very nervous couple of months, you know. And I was sitting there thinking, will the phone ring? And then the phone rang off the hook and I was happy.
So you're back on the road, you're recording, you're writing, you're as prolific with your output as you ever have been. And it's a great gift for us all that you're over here at Traditional Song Week at the Swan and Noah Gathering. And one of the things I've enjoyed so much about hearing you chat is just tapping into your treasure trove of life stories that you convert into song. And even, you know, over a beer at the beer tent, I'll learn more about you and about your life and how you express that in song. And I think it would be really fitting, actually, if you would round things out with a song that takes us into a little bit more of your own personal story. Your mum was from Austria. I wondered if you might end on a personal note by sharing the song you wrote about her.
This was a weird song to write. When I did the Baltic to Byzantium project, and I realised that we were talking about the links between Scotland and Europe, I realised that the premier link for my own family was my own parents. Now, my father came from a rough Scottish working-class family. He came from six kids, one pair of shoes. And like so many others in central Scotland in the 30s, he joined the army before he needed to. Why? Because it was a clean suit of clothes and because it was three square meals a day. As much as anything else, patriotism or anything else to do with that. So he joined the army. He had a tough war. He ended up being sent for training to a place called Aldershot in the south of England. And I always remember, my father never talked about the war except when he had a drink in him, you know? And he told me about this. He said that on Christmas Day, 1941, his Christmas dinner was two slices of bread and butter. And he thought that was wonderful. Just think about that. Think about the lives that we have now and the lives that maybe our parents had. Anyway, he went through the war. He was torpedoed in the Mediterranean. He went through North Africa. He came up through Sicily. He came up through Italy. He saw the bombing at Monte Cassino. He ended his war in Austria in charge of a little lumber camp. And my mother by then had graduated from university in Graz, came from a very different background, came from a background with servants. And she was an interpreter for the Allied forces. They fell in love. In 1947, they came back to Scotland, which is probably just as well for everybody here, otherwise I'd have been sitting here in a Tyrolean hat and lederhosen. But they came back, and my mother had come from this really beautiful country, the bit of Austria known as the Steiermark or Styria. And she came back to the hard industrial landscape of Scotland and ended up with a love of Scottish music, ended up doing very, very well in Scotland, and was welcomed, I have to say, by the Scottish people in a way that took no note of national differences or wars or anything like that. And when I heard my parents talk about the war and about what they had and what they had done, I realized that in many ways, the experience of that generation would be something that in many ways we would consider heroic. But at the same time, it was every day to them. And I decided I wanted to commemorate my father in that way. And when I told my father I was writing this song, he said, "You can do anything you want, but don't make me a hero." And I said, "Okay, I understand what you're saying." And again, like one night when he was in his cups, his job in the army, he had been in the Royal Corps of Engineering. He had been an engineer, what they call a sapper. And he would say, "I built bridges all over Europe, but the only decent bridge I ever built was to your mother." And that gave me the song. So the song's called Bring the Lassie Hame.
of Brian's tuning, can I just say that Brian McNeill is the only person I've ever interviewed for my radio programme in all these years that really requires no editing, time constraints apart. I've never needed to... Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Can I just say a huge thank you to Fiona? Radio things are sometimes purgatory. I have never had a conversation on the radio with Fiona that hasn't been less than wonderful. Please, Fiona.
The baker's laddie to Greenhorn Squaddy, nothing much to lose and the whole world to gain. Mess hall and rations, useless square bashing, and you were always 2 hours march for Laughing's Plain. Shipped off to battle, Cramden Lake cattle, and he had died in the panic when the tin fish found its range. Your best mate found you and rallied around you, and you believed him when he told you your luck would change. Bring the lassie here, feel the rolling hills of Styria, find a bonny boat to carry her and offer her your name. Rise up and leave the cruel wars behind. Listen to the beating of two hearts in time. For the life of an honest Scottish soldier would never be the same. So listen to your heart and bring the lassie home. Aye, you loaded breeches, clear died aye beaches. The bombers at Casino flying through the jerry flack, built daily bridges, cleared mines off ridges. Go with the poor bloody infantry to watch your back. When it was over, still no bed of clover. In tears like ne'er before, and then you found her, hard times around her, and you knew that your life had changed forevermore. Bring the lassie home to the rolling hills of Styria. Find a bonny boat to carry her and offer her your name. Rise up and leave the cruel wars behind. Listen to the beating of two hearts in time. For the life of an honest Scottish soldier would never be the same. So listen to your heart and bring the lassie home. Love knows no season, nae rhyme nor reason. It can build itself a bower in a three-ton army truck. It owns nae nation, nae rank nor station. needs twa lovers who would try their luck, nae flag to follow, nae pride to swallow, nae braggarts of the state. Try and loose the dogs of war, one soldier's story, nae tunes of glory. Just a sapper who builds the finest branch of all. Bring the lassie hame, fae the rolling hills of Styria, find a bonny board to carry her, and offer her your name. Rise up and leave the cruel wars behind. Listen to the beating of two hearts in time. For the life of an honest Scottish soldier would never be the same. So listen to your heart and bring the lassie hame. Listen to your heart and bring the lassie hame. Listen to your heart.
Brian McNeil was my guest at Traditional Song Week at the Swannanoa Gathering. Thanks to Al Pettaway on sound, to Julie Glau-Weems, Doug Orr, Margaret Kennedy and Beth and Jim McGill. The Thistle and Shamrock is a service mark of Fiona Ritchie at thistleradio.com. Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. Newman's Own Foundation, giving all profits from Newman's Own to charity and pursuing the common good for over 30 years. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting physicians and dentists from diverse backgrounds through the Harold Amos Medical Faculty Development Programme. This is NPR Music.